sends her love. I told her, lots of people sending you best wishes, who you don't know even. So she thanks you. Red lilies, they worked. So I can just sit with the gladness. That's what the third part of the chant is. It's appreciation, so it's the joy of someone else's joy. Beautiful state of mind. It's the opposite of jealousy. Anyway, good to be back. What should we be? Just the primal part? I personally enjoy reading about people's experiences of realization. Sometimes I don't understand what they're talking about, but it has a ring of authenticity, which I often write down, and then I read it. Am I getting closer? But there are things I think that we read that touch us sometimes, kind of intuitively. You know, maybe we can't quite figure it out mentally, but intuitively, if we just listen. So the way Ajahn Chah would teach, he said, listen with your heart, not with your head. Or a lot of teachers say, just listen to this and forget about it. There is that where it strikes us at a kind of different level. And that kind of receptive listening is a part of also listening to Dharma, I think. And we can't pick up everything. There's so much information we get, but just, you know, one or two gems, and then that strikes us deeply and works on us. Anyway, this is Nisargadatta's statement, well, a little bit of his realization. The main change was in the mind. It became motionless and silent, responding quickly, but not perpetuating the response. Spontaneity became a way of life. The real became natural, and the natural became real. And above all, infinite affection, love, dark and quiet, radiating in all directions, embracing all, making all interesting and beautiful, significant and auspicious. That's worth aspiring to, but how do you do it? That's the challenge. And then, what was this one? Whenever love and kindness are in your heart, you will have the intelligence to know what to do and when and how to act. When the mind sees its limitations, the limitations of the intellect, a humility and innocence arise, which are not a matter of cultivation, accumulation, or learning, but the result of instantaneous understanding. The moment you see your helplessness, that nothing works, you come to a point of surrender, a standstill, where you are in communion with silence, ultimate truth. And you find that, you know, you're just struggling with everything, nothing's working, you just, to hell with Buddhism. And you relax. And yet you seem to have to go through the struggle to let go. I mean, it's perverse, isn't it? It seems to be, because the will is such a... It's so important to understand the use of will and how we make effort. And it's so grounded in ignorance, isn't it? And we seem to have no choice but kind of to struggle with it until we let go into that purity. It's an interesting process. Silence is our natural state. It is the background of everything. No concentration is necessary to be it. As long as we are involved in perception, we live in time. That is, we live only on the horizontal plane. But silence is timeless. It is at the center where time and timeless meet, where the horizontal and the vertical come together. This point is the heart. Usually in our involvement with objects, we do not really perceive things as they are, but see only the projections of the ego. Unless our perceptions are allowed to blossom in egoless silence, we cannot know, really know reality. Do you see this flower? Let it come to you in its fullness, without imposing your mind on it. Real observation is multidimensional. You see, hear, taste, feel, smell with your whole being, globally. True seeing is alert receptivity and alive passivity. In this observation, an object may appear, but one is not directed to it. There's a lot there. The horizontal is me, what I'm going to do next year. That's the horizontal. It's time. It's like movement, which is fine, which is conventional truth. And yet, have you ever been in the future? Have you always not been now? Right? Have you ever not been absent? You've been maybe confused, but you're not going to be, I'm confused. Have you ever, and that's the timeless, that's the vertical. This is how the kind of perennial philosophy talks about it. The horizontal, me having been born 58 years ago and projected, you know, kind of 20 years left kind of thing. Me in time, my resentments, my hopes, my expectations. But the vertical, this is the way it is now. It knows time as sense of self, as a sense of self, projections as projections. That's what you're doing, meditation. You're coming to the vertical. But you're living in the horizontal. Right? You still have to go to work, sorry. There's no choice. So it's both. It's not denying that. And then learning a whole different way of relating to the objective world, of coming to that, learning to just listen, what does he call it? He calls it alert to receptivity and alive passivity. It's just the use of language. What is that pointing to? That's the vertical. Which doesn't mean that you can't change the flowers. Or you can't fill up the water jug. You can still put your attention on objects. We know how to do that to some extent. Otherwise, we wouldn't be, we wouldn't eat. So that's not that difficult. But it's the other. It's learning this other, because that's where you find your home ground. And that from that you can, one can go forth into the world from clarity. So that's what I think I've been emphasizing in this retreat. Is this whole way of being present, but not being addicted to the need for objects. And of course, where it comes up is when you feel pain, displeasure, boredom, then you're challenged. Can I remain in an alert passivity? And that's the training, very simple training. All right. Shall we sit then?